So then went back, finished my senior year of college, and this friend of mine and I drove across the country to California. And I was looking for Richard Fregna. I was looking for, because I knew he had written the Swallow Song in Big Sur. And so we went through Big Sur, but I didn't see anything, because the zoning is such as everybody, you have to build your house so it's not seen from the road. And so I drove through Big Sur and I thought, what is this? But 2 years later, I had a friend who was working at Esalen. And so when I finally came to California, I left New York to come to California. I looked her up and I found her at Esalen, and I ended up living and working there for a couple of years. And it was the height of hippiedom. It was 67 to 69. And the music that was played in Big Sur was not off a page. It was all improvised. Everybody got stoned, and they big on conga drums and all kinds of handmade drums. People made their own instruments quite a bit. And it was this, you know, I had studied anthropology in college. In my second year, I was an anthropology major. And it was like all these things I had read about all these cultures were happening in Big Sur. I mean, we'd go up in the mountains and roast a pig and play music all night under the stars. And for me, who had always read music off the page, I had to make this huge adjustment. It's kind of like I had to listen to the inner music. And I think that has totally influenced how I compose, because I don't compose from my head. I hear something, I feel something, and that's what I try to express and put on paper. So I learned how to improvise, and the dulcimer. So I started building dulcimers in Big Sur. I had already seen the dulcimer in my last year of high school, because my friend who turned me on to folk music, Susan Kaust, she's not alive anymore, but she brought home two dulcimers from her freshman year in college. She went to this progressive school, Bard College, and I didn't know what that was. So that's even before Richard Fregna. I saw the dulcimer. She was a folkie. She probably played a couple of Gene Ritchie kind of tunes. I wasn't that impressed, but I was impressed that a woman had built a musical instrument in 1965. But the other thing I was impressed with, it was actually earlier than that, it was 61. This was high school. But the other thing was, I realized that people built musical instruments. They didn't just appear in music stores. Every musical instrument you saw in 1961 was made by somebody's hands, you know, and that was pretty interesting to me. And so I got this idea that I wanted to build a dulcimer. So it wasn't until I got to Big Sur that I actually had the opportunity. We all worked at Esalen, you know, like I cleaned cabins, you know, that was the only job I could get. I actually wasn't attractive enough to work in the dining room. There was a real, I'm not going to go into that, but anyway.
I think you just did.
Yeah. So I was cleaning cabins. I was, what do you call that?
Chambermaid.
A chambermaid. And of course, here I have a college degree. I'm a chambermaid. And I'm just loving it, because it's kind of like that period where people dropped out.
The radar.
Right. And the work was easy, and I got to be with this amazing community of people that I was just learning so much from. And but I must have, eventually I rented a little place. So I rented this little cabin, had a roommate, and I decided to build a dulcimer. And so I thought I'd buy one tool a week. And I had read Irving Stone's How to Make a Classical Guitar. That was my instruction. And there was enough information in there. And I have kind of an engineering mind. My father was a mechanical engineer, and I do have his mechanical brain, engineering brain. And so I didn't know how to bend wood. So I made a coffin-shaped dulcimer out of eighth-inch mahogany plywood. And, you know, It worked. This very famous psychologist, Virginia Satir, actually bought it for $25. And anybody in the psychology field will know who she is. She's one of the pioneers of family therapy. So anyway, so there was this thing happening in Big Sur those 2 years. First of all, Esalen was this place where all the new psychologies that were different from the Freudian psychoanalysis, they were coming there and giving seminars. And the whole staff, we were the guinea pigs. So we were exposed to all kinds of wild psychotherapies. You know, things where you hit each other with batakas, you screamed, you know. Yeah, it was the introduction of body work. And also we had these, it was an amazing experience down there. It's so hard to describe because there were sulfur baths. There were natural sulfur baths at Esalen on the cliff, right on the cliff, these big tubs. There was a men's side and a women's side. But people can't imagine, like, we all bathe together nude. And it's a leveler. It kind of levels people. You just have a sense of what human beings are that you don't when we're all walking around in our little costumes. And it was really life-changing experience. But then I got kind of, and then here's the second big turning point. So I had always had emotional problems from high, always, my whole life. Anyway, I was struggling with my sexuality, is what was going on. And you can put this in the article if you want or leave it out. But anyway, even though I was having this great time, I was constantly kind of suicidal and just really did not like myself very much. But anyway, so this Big Sur Folk Festival is coming up. And I had this idea that I would build a dulcimer for either Joni Mitchell or the Incredible String Band. And that was music that I was listening to. And so I went out in the woods looking for some kind of inspiration. By now I was already carving, and I don't think I was doing inlay. Oh, I was doing some inlay, yeah. But I was doing this freeform carving on the pegheads. Like, I would start with a chunk of wood and I would just start carving. And but they all came out as kind of like birds spreading their wings, this feeling of exuberance. And so I found these red wild columbines in the woods. And so those became the sound holes. And that instrument is called the wild columbine. Anyway, so I actually finished it the day before the festival. The finish still wasn't on it, but since I worked at Esalen, I went in, giving you too much information here, but anyway, I saw Joni Mitchell walking down the path, and I put the dulcimer on a table right in front of her. And my friends knew I had this plan to sell it to her or the Incredible String Band, and they all laughed at me. But anyway, it caught her eye. She came over, and she said, "What is that?" And I said, "Oh, it's a mountain dulcimer." And she said, "Well, what does it sound like?" So at that point in my life, the music was just pouring out of me. I mean, it was amazing. And I played it for her, and I said, "Do you want to try it?" And she said, "Yeah." So she tried it, and she said, "Is this for sale?" And I said, "Yes." And she said, "How much?" And I said, "It's $200. Now, most dulcimers sold for about $75 then. But, you know, there's a lot of work in this. And she said, "Well, I would like to buy it, but I have to go perform right now. Can you bring it to my cabin later in the afternoon?" I said, "Sure." Anyway, you know, you can imagine what I was feeling, and my friends were going crazy behind me. So I went to the cabin later, and Crosby, Stills, and Nash, they were all in the cabin with her. And as I think I told you, they had a 30-pound garbage bag full of pot. I had never seen anything like that. And she had me play for them, and she said this one statement. She said something like, "Joellen, you are just beautiful." And it was like my psyche just went, and it was so powerful. I wasn't suicidal after that, and I felt good about myself. And that was a gift that she gave me. And I decided to take myself more seriously musically. And that's when I decided to leave Big Sur and move to Northern California and study at the Ali Akbar College, School of Indian Music, which I did within a few months of that I left.